This is the State of Things, broadcasting from Triad Stage, Upstage Cabaret in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Just a few blocks away from here, a federal jury is deciding the fate of John Edwards. Jurors will decide whether he's guilty on any or all of the six felonies he's charged with. The charges include illegal use of campaign donations, making false statements, and conspiracy. Now, nobody disputes that $1 million or so in campaign contributions were used to hide a mistress and their child from the public eye. In his defense, attorneys argue that Edwards' behavior was shameful but not illegal. If convicted on all counts, he could face up to 30 years in prison. Jeff Tiberi is our Greens Bureau Chief at WUNC. He's been covering the Edwards trial. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You know, something interesting in this case. We've heard a lot about it, I think, and we know. We'll go into some of the details. But the jurors in this case, mm-hmm. were the extras excused. Tell us about that.
It was interesting. Judge Catherine Eagles excused four jurors, but didn't fully excuse them, put them in a hallway, gave the final instructions to the last dozen. They go into the deliberation room, and these four jurors, who have now become alternates officially, who have been in there for 18 days of testimony, come back in, and the judge looks at him and says, I understand this is kind of like having a date to the prom, and then your date doesn't show up. And they smiled, they looked at her, they nodded. So they were dismissed. Again, not fully. They're going to stay in the courthouse today. Potentially she'll call them back on Monday. The reason for this is obviously juries have 12 people and there has to be a unanimous verdict. What the judge wanted to do was keep four alternates handy around so that in the event over the course of what she expected to be a six-week trial, anyone was sick, they had a child they had to take care of, some kind of emergency. If she started with 12 and you lose one and you're down to 11, you have to start this whole process over. She wanted to avoid that. The one interesting note about the four jurors that were dismissed today, three white women and one African-American man. So what that does, the final 12, it's eight men and four women. And, you know, you can put stock in this if you want to. You don't have to. But eight men and four women and six white jurors, five African-American jurors, and one juror who said in jury selection that he's an immigrant from 25 years ago.
But interestingly enough, their alternate status wasn't determined until today. So
no.
It wasn't that the lawyers had any say in that.
No. If anybody knew, it was the judge. Yeah. She could have determined this back in April, but nobody knew.
So let's get back now to the case itself. You know, and I just realized that in my introduction, I made a slight error. I said something like, well, we all agree that $1 million in campaign contributions, but that's really what's in contention here, isn't it?
That is. What we all agree, or what is not in much contention, is that a lot of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars, was used for the purpose of some of it. It's so ambiguous. Some of it was used to hide the mistress, Riel Hunter. But the defense will tell you that of the money that went from Bunny Mellon through her interior decorator to Andrew Young, who's the former confidant, right-hand man of John Edwards, who initially accepted paternity of Edwards' child. Andrew Young kept most of that money, and he's actually admitted to keeping a lot of this money, putting it into his house, into his home. So campaign contributions, not everybody's going to agree. And did it all go to hiding the mistress? No. But there was a lot of money, and some of it was used to hide the mistress. Some of it was used for vacations and homes and jewelry, and some of it for the Young, some of it for the Hunter. It was. Yeah.
And, of course, what's at issue is whether, even if all of it went to hide the mistress, is that a campaign contribution or was it just a gift to John Edwards because he was in some kind of trouble and that would help him out?
Right. The prosecution says, you know, implement a little common sense here. There's no way that these two donors would have given hundreds of thousands of dollars had John Edwards not asked them to. And John Edwards was important at this point in his life because in 2007 and 2008 because he was running for president. The Edwards camp says, now wait a second, none of the checks, none of the money came from Edwards. None of it went through any of his accounts. None of the checks were signed to the Edwards for President campaign. These were, in the defense's words, private donations meant to deal with a private matter. So there's a lot of gray area here, certainly.
So that's what the prosecution is saying. Why would this money have gone to him had he not been a presidential candidate? What does the defense say?
The defense says that these are personal gifts. These are not campaign contributions. They've also pointed out They've mentioned 527s often in testimony. 527s, as I understand it, are PACs, and the ability that if any of you listening to this program said, you know, I really want to help Barack Obama get reelected or Mitt Romney get elected, you could donate $500,000 to the Prosperity for America Next Week and Eating Food PAC. And there's no limit to what you can do. There are limits, of course, what you can contribute to a presidential campaign, but outside of that specific area of contribution, there aren't a lot of limits.
Another strategy for the defense was to try to impeach the lead witness in the case.
Right. They went at Andrew Young when he was on the stand, when other people were on the stand, in closing arguments. They didn't really let up on the assault of Andrew Young. He looked when he testified for five and a half days, it was tense throughout the entire thing. They went at him very hard. His testimony did not match a lot of what he had said in grand jury testimony and FBI interviews in his book, The Politician. And then once he was done, they used other witnesses to impeach him. They made other witnesses, they used other witnesses to point out that he said things that didn't make much sense. Some of them small, and some of them, small again, that's an ambiguous term, some of them seemingly insignificant, and others that felt more significant.
So this trial is one that you have covered. You've been there from the beginning, mm-hmm. and it is, if there is one, a quintessential American tragedy. It's politics, it's money, it's sex.
It is, and there have been many times over the past 4 weeks that President Obama, then Senator Obama, then Senator Clinton's name come up. You hear their names, and it starts to percolate a little bit. And there has been testimony that said, you know, John Edwards was still trying to become the vice president in 08. He wanted to be the attorney general. At one point, we heard he had this long-shot dream of becoming a Supreme Court justice. So I think as big as it feels, and if you drive down or walk down Market Street when you leave the show today, you'll see this circus that has come to visit us in Greensboro. It would be even bigger had he been a nominee again or the vice president or a sitting cabinet member when all of this came to light.
And is it a drama that just circulates around his life, or does it have impact on campaign financing? Does this shed any light on weaknesses in the current campaign finance laws?
It certainly has people talking about, should there be limitations? Is this a free speech issue? But the Supreme Court ruled a couple of summers ago, they took some of the remaining restrictions off of campaign donations. And the thought that some of the legal experts have shared with me is, had Edwards been caught today doing this, he never would have been charged.
Because now corporations can have a kind of a secondary
Correct.
Campaign. If they want to hide your mistress, that's not part of your campaign anymore. It's their campaign.
Right.
And
simple
and
as that.
As simple as that. And they've got more money than you do. So, so I say go out there and have a good time, Jeff. Now that you can do this.
You're going to get me in trouble.
I got to get us all in trouble. Let's talk about John Edwards in North Carolina, because here's somebody who is big, obviously on the national stage as a senator and as a presidential candidate himself and vice presidential candidate in 2004. But in the state of North Carolina, he has a kind of special status. And talk about his reputation here over
this,
time.
This is a man who made tens of millions of dollars as a trial attorney. He lost his son in a car accident, his teenage son. And he ran for Senate in 1998, and I admittedly did not live in North Carolina in 1998, but from everything I've been told and read, this was a very popular man. He was, I think, beloved is a fair word to use by many. The quick push, he wanted to become president in 2000. I mean, he said that in interviews. That was after a year of experience in the Senate. Very narrowly almost became the vice president in 2004. And, the community of Chapel Hill welcomed his land purchase in between the 2004 and the 2008 campaigns when he bought that huge plot of land and built this compound, this estate. And I think there was a prevailing thought in large circles in Chapel Hill was we could have the vice president or the president as our own. This could be his hometown. And, of course, that's all just come crashing apart.
Dissolved quickly. Any sense at all from the court watchers how quickly this jury might come back with?
No. The short answer is we don't have a clue. What I've been telling everybody is 3 hours or 3 weeks.
All right.
So we're going to get it in the next 15, 20 minutes, or we'll know on like June 4th.
We'll hold you to it.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff, thank you so much. Jeff Tavire, reporter at WUNC, our Greens Bureau chief. He's been covering the John Edwards trial. This is the state of things. We're at the Triad stage in Greensboro. Just ahead, we're going to talk about the return of furniture to the Triad. But first, we're going to hear a little music from Crystal Bright and the Silver Hands. They're with us today. We're going to hear more from them. They'll play us into this break, and then we'll come back on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Crystal Bright.